Welcome to She Knows, hosted by Brandon Burns, another show from Torched Productions. This is the show where we tell the stories of amazing women doing amazing things. We share stories of adversity, success, leading as a woman, overcoming challenges with gender, stereotypes, and role models for women all over the world. Tune in to walk away with at least one key insight every episode that will help you on your journey. Let's get down to the show, and if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and review us on all your favorite platforms and visit us at gettorched.com. Well, hey there, everyone, and welcome back to the very first episode of She Knows. So I'm not really welcoming everyone back. I'm saying hey for the very first time. I'm Brandon Burns, your host, and we have kicked the show off in a virtual format to begin with because we are, of course, stuck in these crazy lockdown times. But that isn't going to stop us. So today I'm super, super excited to bring you an amazing guest. Now, we've interacted already on another show, and she's been incredibly generous already, and it's been really impressive to watch her journey to date, and more importantly, what she's been able to get up to and navigate through this lockdown with her career, because as you're about to find out, it's a heavily active and quite a physical in-person job and profession she has. So I'm really super keen to share with you also some tips and tricks on how she's getting through these times as well. But look, I'm going to introduce our guest. I hope you're excited. I am. Now, let me tell you a little bit about her, and I'm going to get her to tell me if I've gotten anything wrong. She is a four-time national Australian champion. She's a world bronze champion. She is also the lead singer of a punk rock band called iRoll. So start Googling that now. You'll be blown away. She's had 89 fights. She's also a two-time BoxAm champion. She traveled the world. She heads up KH Boxing. You've got to Google that one as well. You'll be blown away. I want to introduce to the show Christy Harris. How are you?
Hey, mate. I'm really good. How are you?
Longest intro ever, I know. But after 89 fights, there's quite a bit that's transpired. That is super impressive. I mean, I have to ask, after 89 fights, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I know. When I, like, honestly, I didn't know how many bouts I had for so long, and people kept asking me, and I was like, oh, just I'll go and count my book. And it took me like three goes to go through my record book and count them all and figure out the wins and losses and all that. So I was like kind of shocked, but then it just kind of reminded me, wait, I have been doing this a long time, and you know, it's been a massive journey and very, very eventful. So it makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, feeling pretty good, pretty good.
Well, I have to ask, it's back in 2014 that you competed at the Comm Games. Now, that's, you know, 7-8 years ago. When did you really experience that first kind of bump in winning a championship or sort of really accelerating as a boxer? Was it around then or was it much earlier?
To be honest, it all took off very, very quickly for me. So my coach held me off from competing for 2 years. So I told him I was ready to fight when I was 16, and he made me wait for 2 years before he let me have my first fight. And when he did, I was just so excited and nervous to finally hear those words. But I won my first three fights by TKO, so technical knockout. So it all happened really quick. And after four fights, I made the Victorian team. And after eight fights, I was selected for the first time to be on the Australian team to go to the World Championship. So probably that moment in 2012 when I qualified at a national event, I won the gold in the 48-kilo division to represent Australia at the World Championship. So it was a funny time. Like I'd never been overseas before, so I didn't have a passport, hadn't been away from like my family and friends for that long, and then all of a sudden I had to like order an emergency, like an urgent passport. I was heading off to China for 3 weeks to an international training camp, then to the AIS in Canberra for a training camp, then back to China to compete at the world. So that was probably the first big one for me.
Wow, that's awesome. I want to ask you, you mentioned that your first coach, who sounds like he's quite dear to you, was smart enough to have the intuition to hold you back. But then you describing how everything happened really quickly for you, in hindsight, how much of a masterstroke was that?
Yeah, it was good. Look, it was kind of frustrating at the time. Like, I was like, come on, just let me fight. Like, I've been training so hard. So I'd go into the gym on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday when everyone else would come in and do the usual boxing session. But then on Tuesday and Thursday, I'd be going in the gym by myself to train with just him, and he'd put me through this punishing circuit and maybe some more pad work or whatever. So I, from the get-go, I was always working hard for his respect and for him to believe in me that I was ready to go. He obviously, I realized after I had my first fight and I stopped during the second round that he didn't want me to get hurt or lose badly and be disheartened. So I thank him for, you know, pushing me, making me push through that. And, you know, I learned a lot about persistence and as well the power of it. So, yeah, by the end of it, I was thankful. I mean, by the time I did my first fight, I was thankful he held me off.
Yeah. So you had that real bump of success and TKOs at the beginning of your career. So how did that set you up for when you eventually experienced your first loss? And what was that like?
Yeah, that was really tough. So my first loss was when I went to my first nationals, and I lost to a girl who had been around for a long time. She was a lot more experienced than me. Didn't like lose too badly or anything, but she definitely clearly won it. So yeah, it was really hard. It was tough, but then I just had to remember, look, you know, most of the girls here have had a lot more fights than you have, and you've only, that was only a few fights, so I sort of like let that settle. But it was also a really hard time at that stage then. It was such a weird time because my first coach, Mick, who we were just talking about, that held me off for so long, he passed away at the end of 2011, and then his dad took over as coach. So his dad, who's now my coach, or one of my coaches, Kev Murray, his son took over as coach. So, you know, luckily he did, because I don't know if the boxing gym would still be around. So he's done a great job. You know, he's got a young family and works full time as a bricklayer. So he's absolutely awesome. But it was just weird, first of all, you know, I was sad about the loss of my coach who I'd spent all this time with and finally started competing, you know, and we were getting closer and closer, and I lost him. And then Kev coming in as a coach, which he's great, but like it's you get so sensitive and touchy with like who's your coach in your corner and what they do and stuff, because you get used to doing things a specific way. But it's good because Kev is just like his dad, just younger. So yeah, it was tough. It was a tough time with that as well. But you know, it's, yeah, that wasn't just the first sort of hiccup that's happened along the way. That was just the beginning.
Yeah. So what did you take from the experience of having that real jolt and then having to get used to a bit of change and evolving? Like, what did you learn from that that helped you get through these other ones?
Yeah, so basically, you know, it's that whole thing about to grow, you must suffer. You must suffer to grow. So, you know, I probably didn't have that in my mind back then, but I was good at quickly turning it around and using it as drive to go, okay, I haven't qualified. So that nationals were actually the qualifications for the world championships. Now, the world championships in 2012 was the first year that women's boxing had been brought into the Olympics. So that world championships was the qualifications for the Olympics as well. If that makes sense. It gets all complicated. But so my big goal was to qualify for these world championships in an Olympic weight division of 51 kilos and then try and qualify for the Olympics, which is very, very ambitious for someone who's only had four fights. But, you know, you just never know what might happen. So I gave it a crack. But after I didn't qualify, I said, okay, well, what can I do now? I just turned it around and used it as drive to work on what was next. And I had a quick chat with my coach then. And we decided, I was making weight really easily. I was making 51 kilos really, really easily. Those days are far gone, but I was. And we decided I would drop down to 48 kilos and go to a selections event for the world championships. And then I won. And that was the first time I qualified to represent Australia.
Wow. So you dropped down to 48. Wow, that's, I mean, I have to ask, like, What is that process like?
Oh, it's not fun, I must say. Making weight, it was, you know, I learned as much as I could about it so I could get down in the weight as best and as safely as possible. So it's, you definitely cut out a lot of food. You usually a half of my carb servings, you know, got to completely stay away from junk food, lollies, chocolate. You know, you can have all the diet soft drink and non-sugar things you want. But you just basically, nice and simply put, you got to reduce your calorie intake and increase your energy output. So, you know, I do extra training sessions on top of the ones I was already doing. And things like that. And then also usually to get the last 1 or 2 kilos off would mean going to the sauna or going for a run in your sweat jacket and things like that.
So I was going to ask you, is it harder, easier or different for, you know, a female to drop weight in boxing as it is for a male, or is it more unique just to every single individual? And you mentioned something also about doing it in a safe manner.
Yeah. So it really, like, it really is harder for women, probably because our bodies are designed to actually have more body fat percentage. And then if we don't hold a specific amount of body fat, it can detriment, like, your nutrients and your health. You know, there's all this thing about energy deficiency, and I've gone through that through making weight not in a healthy manner, and that can be more detrimental to women. So it is more important for women to understand what happens to your body when you lose all this weight. When your body isn't holding as much fat as it should. And, you know, in general, it just depends on the person, definitely, but in general, men usually sweat more, so they'd be able to spend less time in the sauna sometimes. But, you know, we've definitely got a couple of us on the team that sweat plenty, so yeah.
Yeah, there was a UFC fighter, I think it was Paige VanZant recently, who had experienced some troubles and battles with dropping weight in an unhealthy manner for the UFC. Was there anything about her case study and what she went through that stood out to you as something that would be a real learning exercise for people watching that?
I don't actually follow see that much, so I don't know. What was it? What did they want?
she was a female UFC athlete, Paige VanZant, I believe. And she had a really bad time dropping weight, and she was really brave to take everyone behind the curtain and show them, you know, the realities and the uncomfortable nature of some of the things they have to do. And I just think it's really cool to hear you talk about the energy deficiency stuff and nutritional side, and how you really prioritize doing it safely.
Oh, all right. Yeah, definitely. Look, I thought it was like the time. I was like, I'm making weight easily, blah, 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 blah. I didn't actually notice too much of losing the energy at the time, because sometimes you get so tired, you just run adrenaline, right? And then I would just crash. Yeah. But it was like, became prevalent to me when we were in the UK training with the Great Britain team, and I'd just come back from, me and another girl went to 2 tournaments, Poland and Russia, I think. So I had about 6 fights over like 2.5 weeks, and I won all of them. So I won gold at both of the tournaments. And then I finished those 2 tournaments and went straight into a heavy week of training. And I was sitting really light. So like, any nutritionist and coach wants you to sit just a little bit over your weight division and then cut the weight off when you get close to the fight. But I was walking around at like 49, 50 kilos for a 51 kilo division quite easily. And, and then, I was running on all this adrenaline, like all excited because I won these fights, blah, 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 making weight easy, happy days, blah, blah, blah. Went into a solid week of training, and then it was like a Friday, and I remember I was just laying in my bed and I felt like I could barely move. Like, I just felt, you know, when you're that initial tired feeling you have in the morning when your alarm first goes off, it was like that was just there all the time. And my body was just kind of like uncomfortable and so fatigued, and my coach nearly sent me home. because we were due to go to Germany next up. So we were in Great Britain on a training camp and due to go to Germany for the Queen's Cup tournament, which I've competed in a couple of times. And he said, nah, you're going home, you're going to burn out and maybe get injured or get sick, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, please don't send me home, blah, blah, blah. He goes, all right, so, okay, well, you're not training until you start to feel better and you put on at least 2 kilos. So all the girls were heading off to training every day and I'd go walk across the road to Subway and buy cookies and just stuff my face until I eventually put a bit of weight on, and then he let me keep training, but he still didn't let me compete at the Queen's Cup. So, you know, this is the national head coach, Kevin Smith, like he knows what he's on about. So, you know, I did argue with him a little bit, but in the end of the day, I definitely take what he says into account and go by what he says. So just goes to show that how important it is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's amazing. We're about 10 minutes in and we've just gone off track, but it's great. It always happens. I want to bring you back in and ask.
I know.
Like, tell me, like, I know it's different now because we're in, you know, funny times, but maybe give me a glimpse of what a typical day in the life of Christy Harris looks like, you know, pre and post sort of lockdown, or pre and during.
Yeah, cool. So, So, like, it's not too different for me, I guess. I'm used to kind of the confinement side of things, actually. But I suppose the biggest difference is not traveling. So, like I said, when I first made the team in 2012 and was going to China, I've been overseas and or interstate with the Australian boxing team every single year since. So last year even, I was actually in Jordan in Amman for the Olympic qualifiers in February, and before that I was in Thailand in a training camp. So even last year I was traveling. So when I come home, that was, 2020. And, yeah, that's right, 2020. And then, like, to Canberra and stuff as well. So, you know, it's a similar sort of routine. It just depends where I am. And I'm usually traveling. So now during COVID, like, first things first, as soon as the alarm goes off, it's coffee and heat packs. So I have a couple of injuries that are sort of ongoing, being managed by me. So that's the first thing. I heat my body up so I can actually walk around all right. And I do a little bit of yoga.
What time is my day?
So I'm a big anywhere between like 6 and 7. Like, I'm a bit, it depends. Usually around 6:37. Depends if I've got a lot on and I'm stressed out, I won't sleep much. I'll be up at the crack of dawn ready to go. And then I sort of plan out my day. I love Excel spreadsheets. So I've got like my to-do lists on there, like I have to do, to do next, to do in, you know, a week's time or whatever. And my diary as well. If it's a Monday, I'll plan out my week. Then I head into the shed here. I've got a little gym set up in the shed at home. So I'll head in there and do my strength and conditioning session. So that'll either be like a weight session, a bike session, or a circuit. And then I'll either, like, I'll head back in, time for brekkie, and be more studying. I've got heaps of different appointments going on, such as, like, line with a professional keynote speaker who I work with on my storytelling for my presentations, or I'll host a Zoom event, or I'll be presenting virtually on Zoom to a school group or company. So that's all under like KH Boxing, and often through the Vic Institute of Sport, I do keynote speaking. Then a lot of the time, at least every week, once a week, I'll have like a physio or massage appointment for recovery and managing injuries. Then I'll head to the boxing gym in the afternoon and train from around 4 to 5:30. Come home, dinner, maybe a little bit more uni work or anything else that I need to do, and then I'll watch some Buffy and get some sleep and do it all again the next day.
I love it. Yeah, one thing you omitted that I'm hoping you tell me is, are there some form of like vocal exercises, songwriting, or band rehearsal in there at any stage?
Yeah, definitely. So usually a Saturday we have band practice, but it just depends. If I randomly think of something to write a song about, I'll grab out my little lyrics book and write it out. It comes to a lot of places with me. And yeah, we usually have band practice on a Saturday. So that's really good because I'll get up on a Saturday morning and do my last session for the week, my last training session. And then it's like time to chill and hang out with my friends and go do something. But it's also something that's still productive. So it's good.
Love it. So tell me, right, you've got interest now in the creative space and also in the sporting space. Who were some of your role models growing up? So if you were to think back to some of your earliest memories, who were some of those key role models that really shaped you?
Yeah, cool. So, like, to be honest, it wasn't like any boxes. I was young. I didn't know much about boxes when I was younger. I didn't know about box pool. Didn't get into it till I was 14 and still didn't know much about boxing then or any real fighters until years after. But what I will never forget is my mum having a film clip from the Divinals on the TV and Chrissy Anfield in 14 when I first watched it. And I will never forget it because I was instantly like, it instantly caught my attention in my eye. And that day on, I've just loved her. She's definitely a great role model, not just because she has great music and comes from Geelong also actually, but I admire like her attitude, her aggression. And I read her book when I was young and learned about her, went against all the odds and worked really to be a front woman of one of Australia's best rock and roll bands, you know, like she's a true punk and a true role model for women. Like her and Ozzy Osbourne and all the women in the L7 band I've always loved. But then even nowadays for boxers, I can easily see Katie Taylor. Like she's incredible. She's an Irish boxer. She's not one of those prize fighters putting up modeling photos and fighting for some made up title. She's just genuine and gets on with the hard training. Like, you know, she's just that in itself, aside from being one of the world's best boxers. She's what a true female role model is. Yeah, but like apart from that, I'm also obsessed with David Goggins.
He's a fit man, isn't he?
Oh, he's so awesome.
So tell me, right, if you had to look back now at the last, you know, 8-10 years and how you've navigated, I guess, the landscape of boxing, especially as a female athlete, have there been any, I guess, like gender-specific challenges or, you know, situations that you've experienced that have either, you know, not gotten better or have gotten better since, or that you've really tried to play an active role in improving?
Yeah, definitely. Can easily say there has been. I don't know if it, in a way, I think it has gotten a bit better, especially because, you know, ever since women's boxing was introduced into the Olympics in 2012 and the Commonwealth Games in 2014 when I went, I think people have realised that, you know, female boxers are decent. You know, so it may have improved a little bit, but so many times over the years, like I'm talking from the very beginning and until recently, like ongoing, no doubt there'll be more of them. You know, it usually is middle-aged men or older men who say, you know, they find out I'm a boxer and then say things like, "You're too pretty to box. Why would you want to ruin that pretty face?" Or "Boxing is too violent for women." Or "Can you beat up your boyfriend?" Just sit. Stupid things like that. And I've heard them all a million times. And they think they're giving you a compliment saying you're pretty, but really it's just like sexist because they wouldn't be saying that to a male boxer. And like, I know that I wasn't, and I think I can speak on behalf of a lot of female boxers, you know, put on this earth to look pretty for someone. Like, I can do a lot more than that. And well, sometimes I just think they're intimidated.
Yeah.
Like one time, me and a friend were working at the pub on the door scanning the tickets or selling tickets for some local bands that were playing, like to get into the band room. My friend hadn't done it before and she's a lot younger too. And anyways, this man walks in and he's probably in his 50s, 40s, 50s, and he's refusing to pay $15 to see some local bands. And we argue back and forth, and then he looks at me closely, and he comes down and he looks at me and he goes, "Are you Glenn and Annette's daughter?" And that's my parents. And I'm like, "Yes, I am." And he obviously realized who I was and that I was a boxer. So then he just steps back. He goes, "Oh, okay, then I won't be arguing with you," and hands over the money. And in he goes. it's funny, right? Like, it is funny, but like, what if my friend was there by herself? Like, he should be giving any girl the same respect he is giving me. I don't think I'm any better because I know how to throw a punch. Like, it's ridiculous.
yeah, totally. So, yeah. With regards to that stereotype, how do you handle the stigma that comes with being an athlete in that sport when it comes to things like, people assuming you might be aggressive or angry or tough, or, you know, how do you handle that stigma and how do you find you best sort of break it down for people so they can see who you truly are?
Yeah, I just kind of like challenge it and, I try, I admit I can be feisty sometimes, but in my reactions, but learning to like sort of relax and control it a bit more and actually coming back with something that challenges them, you know, so like people would be like, "Oh, so like you're like Ronda Rousey," and I'm like, "No, that's a completely different sport. I don't do UFC and like boxing," you know, or they refer to as like fighting and violence and brutal. I'm like, "Well, no, there's actually a lot more to boxing than being tough. Like, tough ain't enough. Like they say, a $1 million baby. There's a lot more skill in boxing, and we wear a headgear and a mouth guard. And we're always, you know, looked after by the high performance team. So you can chill out."
All right. Well, I love that. Now that you've become, I wouldn't just call you the athlete that you are, but now that you've become more so the person that you are, right? Because there's a lot of diversity to you and you've got these two elements of them running. What changes would you like to implement, I guess, for other female athletes and professionals coming through? So, you know, if you could speed up things to get better in some ways for others coming through, if you were to rewind back to when you were 2021, what are some of those key changes you'd love to implement now because you know they'll just speed things up for the next you?
Yeah, of course. So, like, for me, there's like two main things. It's first, I want just the boxers who are actually the best to be getting the opportunities, the sponsors, and the fame and fortune they deserve, not boxers who turn their Instagram into a part boxing, part modeling sort thing and using their looks and a good Instagram page to get a following and sponsors. I think it's just ridiculous these days. Like, you'll approach a company for a sponsor and they care more about how many people are following you over what achievements you've done. You know, like, I understand being active on social media and wanting a bigger network following for their company, but you got to look at what kind of network that is also, you know, like, is it just like a bunch of creepy men who follow someone because they're posting pictures in their underwear, or is it a following that actually has decent people who are genuinely interested in boxing? I just don't like that it's turned into that. People are becoming more and more less genuine and more about image. I don't like that about the sport, and it's definitely bigger in the pros than the amateurs. Like, in the amateurs, it's plain and simple. There's one gold medal, there's one world championship medal, there's one Olympic gold medal for that year, for whatever year it is. You have to beat the best to be the best. In the pros, there's all these different world titles and stuff. So, yeah, I think it just, like, takes people on a ride sometimes. There's that. And then also just hoping that women in sport know how to react to situations of adversity. You know, it's easy to think that a male is giving you a compliment by saying you're too pretty to box and being like, oh, yeah, no, it's cool. But really, they aren't. It's degrading, you know. Just for other women to know what to say in response to that makes a big difference in that present time, but also makes a difference to change the way men think about women in sport overall. Like if you answer them with something like, oh, what are you saying? What do you mean by that? Are you saying I should put my passion and dreams aside to ensure I don't get a black eye or a crooked nose so I can look pretty for you? Is that what you're saying? You know, like stuff yeah. like that. The challenges them and puts them in their place. Like my first eye roll song in the band is called Too Pretty, and that's exactly what that is about. Still one of my favorite songs to this day.
Wow. I love that. I think that's awesome to hear. It's quite jolting, but it's like it's a great lesson for a lot of people to learn. And it's interesting to hear your perspective around how you explain how it's not a compliment in any way. It's actually the opposite, and people need to be aware of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great to hear you can sort of stick it to them through singing that song all the time, you know?
Oh, you just get sick of hearing it, you know, over time. Like, I don't know how many times. Like, I even feel sorry for my partner, Tom. Like, whenever, you know, I meet someone and I'm with him, they're like, oh, does she beat you up? Like, it's just stuff like that. Just, it's funny. It's funny. It's whatever. But there comes a point where some of the stuff is just ridiculous.
Yep, totally.
Oh, yeah.
I want to ask you, what are some of your secrets to success? And I also want to ask that question around how it appears that you've been able to adapt yourself really quickly to singing in the band, being on stage in front of an audience, and, you know, having that real confidence. And I'm assuming, I want you to tell me about, like, if there's some secrets that you've used that you've now been able to apply and cross over.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess it is my secret, but what I can say is finding your purpose. So, yeah, find your purpose, your why you do what you do. That can be very powerful. You know, I don't just box because I love the sport. I do, but there's so much more behind the reason why. And sometimes that can be a very powerful tool towards success. So there's that. And then there's also, you know, like if you had told me that I'd be sitting here now doing this with you years and years ago, I would have been like, no way. You know, like I'm someone in school who barely put their hand up in class, you know, was too shy, full of anxiety, that sort of thing. So all I've really done is just like force myself into uncomfortable situations. I've gotten rid of the safety blanket. And that goes for the same thing with the band as well. Like I was so nervous on our first band practice day. Like the guys are all like my three close mates and, you know, they were totally cool about everything. And I guess just like putting myself into that situation and making myself do it time and time and time again, you know, you get used to it, just like exposure therapy type thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So how many gigs in now? I mean, you've done 89 fights. I'm keen to hear how many live gigs you've done.
Four.
Oh, here we go.
We've done four, but we've practiced several times. Like as I said, we usually have jams on a most Saturdays when it's not full lockdown. So yeah, we practice a lot and yeah, I think just like after doing the first show, I think I still get nervous before every show, but you definitely do get more used to it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that how you just got to put yourself in the moment and you've got to, you know, sink or swim. It's yeah. brilliant. Okay, yeah. All right. So
No,
you go ahead, expand on that for me.
I was just gonna say it's funny to say that because I think it was being Josh, our bass player. Like, I've been mates with him for years, and we would always, every time we'd be at the pub together, we'd always be like, oh, I've got to start. He'd be like, Christy, you'd be great singing in a band. You know, you like good music. We've got to do it. We've got to start a band. I'm like, yeah, we'll start a band one day, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you teach me the music stuff and I'll teach you how to box or something like that. And we spoke about it for so long. And then it wasn't until COVID happened and I was obviously home for a while that we actually started it. And, you know, I was talking to him before our first band practice and it was before our first show, because it happened really quickly again, like boxing. Like, yeah. All of a sudden we had got like six songs done of our own, three, like a couple covers. And they were like, one of them said, oh, let's play this show on the weekend coming up, whenever it was. And I was like, sorry, what? We're going to do what? And I was just thinking that we'd just be like mucking around in my mate's shed playing some music. But we, started doing shows, and I was like, oh my God, I was so nervous. And Josh was just like, Christy, what do you mean? You fight, you do boxing. Like, surely it's as nerve wracking as that. I was like, yeah, but it's also nerve wracking. It's just different.
So on that, I have to ask, that sounds like potentially one of, but what are some of your biggest fears?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, I fear, like, I haven't really thought about it that much. Like, I'm shit scared of sharks, I know that. But I fear not looking back. I fear not looking back on my life, you know, when I'm older and retired or whatever, and thinking I didn't give it my best crack. Like, I don't want to look back and regret not stepping out of my comfort zone or giving my best crack, you know, not being able to reach my full potential or give myself the opportunity to reach my full potential. So, like, as I said before, like, getting rid of the safety blanket and just, like, I'll do everything in my power as I live now to not live an ordinary life, and stick, you know, and stick by my values and what's important to me, despite of like social norms. You know, it's not about regretting, you know, bad decisions even, or even if I don't succeed, it's about not doing the best I could in the situation I'm in, I guess.
Yeah.
Does that count? That.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like fears really drive you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you had a close call with a shark?
No, I see my own shadow in the ocean and I run.
That's awesome. We sort of uncovered what probably used to be a secret talent but is now well and truly out of the bag with your singing and your songwriting. Is there another maybe unique secret talent you have that no one knows about?
I can see through people's bullshit, maybe. I consider like this as more of a blessing and a curse, I guess. But having a highly anxious mind, high performance mindset, you know, it means I get things done in the quickest time possible to a high quality. I won't sleep until I'm on top of things, like structure, being driven. You know, I always hated having a ton of anxiety, but I've learned to accept it and see its positives. You know, it definitely comes with a cost and it's often hard to deal with, but it's also why I'm good at getting shit done and where I am today and what, you know, what achievements I've done so far, and, you know, also the person I am today as well. So I kind of see it as a blessing and a curse. Yeah. Does that answer that?
No, it does indeed. I want to ask you about KH boxing and your other interests and how you've transitioned successfully into business and sort of getting entrepreneurial and having interests that you can drive revenue and income from, and talking about the importance of that whilst being an athlete.
Yeah, cool. So Yeah, I think that like I've definitely could say like I've learned a lot about life through boxing and traveling the world, and also about myself. So a lot of like self-awareness has come from all the things I've gone through, you know, mainly the challenges, the hard stuff. And I just like to put that out there, you know, and present it to people so that people can learn things that I've learned and take it into their aspect of their life. So that's why I love like presenting to schools or and companies. I love, you know, giving my story as a boxer and some of the challenges that, you know, I've faced and how I've overcome them. So like I talk about sort of like goal setting, and then I also talk about like mental health, exercise with mental health. Like I love doing those sorts of things. And, you know, like why not use, you know, what are really my expertise, because I, you know, I've lived through this stuff, you know, why not use that to build, you know, this brand and turn it into, you know, some income, you know. But I just love doing it. I really do. I love presenting. Like I also write strength and conditioning programs. I've got my level 2 in strength and conditioning coaching. Got that a couple of years ago. So obviously with COVID, it's a bit hard to do face-to-face, but I write online strength and conditioning programs for people of all sort of levels. You know, I've started a new KH boxing mentoring program as well for younger athletes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just a lot of work with schools too.
I love that. Has there been one curveball question you've got when you've been speaking in the school which has really left you sort of speechless and you haven't known what to say, or what's been a real, you know, weird one?
Yes, I've had a couple. All right. Okay, yeah, definitely do. I got a couple. All right, so once this girl, I think she was grade 3, came up to me and they'd asked me about sponsors, and then after the session she came up to me and told me that she was sponsored by KFC. So I just told her she was a very lucky girl. And then once I was taking something happened in the day at the school and I wasn't supposed to, but I ended up taking a presentation for the preppies, so the little ones. And I was like, all right, no worries, I'll make it work. Just tried to keep it fun and stuff. And then like halfway through, this little boy up the back puts his hand up and goes, I want McDonald's. And I was just like, what? And then all of a sudden the whole class started chanting, McDonald's, McDonald's. I just started laughing, and so did the teacher. It's like, how can you not, right? But like on a serious note, like I have gotten some great questions from kids over the time. And, you know, it is great to do those talks, because you get to hear things from kids like that, like, you know, some good stuff. And I had some really good feedback from that school I went to in Warrnambool a few weeks ago. The teacher emailed me and she was like, oh, you know, great feedback. All the kids enjoyed it. Well done. I had this one bit of feedback from a grade 3 boy. And he goes, she's the best woman I've ever met besides my mum. How cute. Oh, I loved
it. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Do you still have the ability to, you know, chat with these kids and students via Zoom whilst we're stuck in these conditions? And is it different, or is it still able to be done?
Yeah, can definitely still do them. I've done a couple of Zoom presentations over the last couple of weeks, and you can still keep them quite interactive because you've got the chat box there. And I did a goal setting presentation for apprentice jockeys, actually year 1, 2, and 3, a few weeks ago, and I actually, you know, emailed them all a template prior to, so we could work together. So you can still keep it quite interactive and stuff like that. You just got to go about it the right way. So, you know, some schools have decided to just cancel a lot of presentations because they do want them face-to-face, which is fair enough. It sucks, but it's fair enough. And then other schools have decided to do Zooms, which has been awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I want to give you an opportunity to sort of share with us also the people who are really assisting you on the journey and your sponsors and those things. So I know I'm putting you on the spot and there's a lot to mention, but are there some key people you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, definitely. I think like I'd be here all day listening to people that have helped me and supported me in my journey so far. But definitely, firstly, shout out to my close friends and my partner. So Tom, Bridie, you guys are awesome. My band, so the IROL family. And then especially to all the guys at the Vic Institute of Sport. They've all been awesome through absolutely everything. My physio here, Luke Johnson, at Cryo Bay Sports Medicine in Geelong. He's just so great. And then, you know, also Wise Monkey Tattoos. They're another major sponsor of mine. And they're good friends of mine too. So definitely those guys. And then I've got Helen Industries. I've also got Urban Drill, DPC Build, and All Time Plumbing too. And Pets Hotel. And, of course, Mum and Dad. See, I could just keep going. And my coaches.
Yeah, I love it. So if you had to sort of, you know, give us one core, really swift piece of advice that you've either received or you just love hearing every time that you think really rings true, in particular for not just a female athlete, but just, you know, people in general that you picked up on, what would that be?
That would be train your mind as well as your body.
Please explain.
You know,
I'm writing like it down.
I've realized like over the years, you know, and as I've got older, how important mental health is. And it is another sort of interest and definitely a passion of mine. Like I'm studying psychological science at the moment, and you know, it became obvious to me that, you know, what's the point of having a physically strong body with a weak mind? You know, when I first, you know, heard that or thought of it, you know, it really stuck out to me, and it's something I've always thought of. And I think that, you know, not just sport in life, but a lot of things, it is, you know, your mental state plays a massive role in it. So, and I know for a fact that I've stepped into the ring and competed and fought a certain way and done really well and actually boxed, you know, and won, and then gone in another day and my anxiety might be higher than usual or something like that, or I'm not feeling good, I'm having a crappy day, bit of a bad mood, you know, I can get in there and I can be a completely different fighter, you know. I'm more of a fighter than a boxer on those days. I just want to get in there and punch on and get it done. So, it all comes back to what's going on upstairs. So that's something that I think is really important. And that's another thing that I present on as well is I did a presentation a couple of days ago on sports psychology and how vital it has been and is to me.
That's excellent. So, you know, we've gotten almost to the end of the episode. You brought out another doozy. You're studying psychological science. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You should start a podcast, Christy.
Just talk about each different aspect of life.
Yeah.
Christy, it's like.
Yeah.
Get analyze people on, I'll get you on. You can be my guest.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, very interesting guest, that one. Now, tell me, right?
Enjoy your bit.
As we come to a close, like obviously, people are going to check this out. It's all part of our new show and format, Shinos, which is, you know, empowering women, but more importantly, shining light on their stories, and then really, if people can walk away with two or three nuggets, which I'm sure they would from this episode, that's like an awesome outcome. But I want people also to be able to really dig deeper with you. How can they find you, check you out? What are the websites for KH? What's the Instagram socials? How can people continue with you?
Yeah, definitely. So the Instagram is KH Boxing Score. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well, Kristy Harris, K-R-I-S-T-Y. I've got a website. It's www.khboxingtraining.com. You can find most of my information on there. My email should be on there as well. And then like, there's always Facebook. So it's Kristy Harris-KHBoxing.
Love it.
And
excellent.
Then you can find the band I Rolled Along Instagram too.
Yeah. So can a virtual concert happen? Like, can a virtual gig happen, or is it just nowhere near the same?
Yeah, it can definitely happen. Like a couple of weeks ago on a Friday night, my mate, or the guy who's a guitarist in the band, he does like this different like electronic stuff, and he did a live performance at the space that we practice at. So it's definitely an option, but like because we're in strict lockdown, we can't even go practice now. So like maybe when the restrictions ease, I will put that idea forth, I reckon.
Love it. Well, Kristy Harris, four-time Australian national champion, lead singer of the punk rock band I Roll, and, you know, 89 fights in and still going strong. Thank you for being on our show, and we can't wait to do it all again with you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of She Knows. If you loved what you heard, then do us a favour and review and subscribe to us on all your favourite platforms. To get in touch, head to gettorched.com and see you on the next episode.